from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio, this is Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, here today for Dave Iverson. In this hour of Forum, who isn't feeling overwhelmed these days? Our inboxes fill up faster than we can empty them, and it seems we're constantly tied to the office through smartphones and computers. Well, David Allen has developed a devoted following as a management guru. His new book, Getting Things Done, outlines his system of reducing stress, becoming more creative, while increasing productivity. Seem too good to be true? Well, David Allen will share his insights and strategies and explain how you can adopt them in your life. We'll get started with Forum right after this. And welcome once again to Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, sitting in today for Dave Iverson. And this hour, we're going to tackle a problem most of us face in the 21st century. Too much to do, so little time. My guest, David Allen, is a productivity consultant and coach who helps clients reduce their stress, prioritize their inboxes, and increase productivity without feeling overwhelmed. His newest book is called Getting Things Done, GTD, as it's known in the trade, The Art of Stress-Free Productivity. David Allen, welcome to the Forum.
Delighted to be here. Thanks, Scott.
Well, clearly this is not a one-size-fits-all kind of a single solution, but describe first of all what you see as the challenge that people face today and the kind of system you use in approaching it.
I think the challenge is not that there's anything new, but how frequently it is. And I mean, as we're speaking, things are piling up in your in basket, in my in basket, and not just things, and it's not just information, it's potentially meaningful things. And we have to then understand, what does that email mean? What do those meeting notes mean? What am I going to do about that? It's just how frequently those things can change our priorities, can create projects, and just create change. You know, you and I probably got more in the last 24 hours than our parents got in a month. So that's what's new, is how frequently we need to recalibrate.
And of course, it does not all have, or should not all have, the same priority.
Of course not.
But sometimes it is hard to differentiate. Sometimes you're just going through your email, right?
Yeah. Well, let me just fast forward to the end game here. And that is, if you're still using your psyche as your system, as opposed to a system to keep track of all the meaningful things that you're committed to, you'll be driven by latest and loudest, quite simply. Because the psyche can only handle seven to nine things in short-term memory before you lose context of all of that. And as soon as you start piling up, and most people don't have a clue how many things they've actually committed to, meaningful things in their life. I need cat food. I need to call my sister. Oh, yeah, I need to launch the ad campaign. Oh, I need to think about a new career. I need to update my resume, yada, yada, yada. I mean, there's so much out there, and the psyche is just not designed to manage all of that, and you'll just wind up being at effect of it as opposed to consciously making good choices.
And so if we don't use the system, and I want to get into, of course, what that is, we're just sort of scrambling and stressed out, basically?
Yeah, pretty much.
But, you know, I don't use your system. And maybe I'd like to, but maybe I will one day. But I kind of feel like, you know, I balance a lot of things. I don't let a lot of balls drop. Yes, I'm probably doing things, quote unquote, wrong, because I'm always checking my email. And I check my email first thing in the morning on my iPhone, those sorts of things. So can we get by? I mean, obviously, people do get by,
sure,
without using it. So what's the payoff?
Well, one way to look at the payoff is that I'm the laziest guy on the planet. And I just came up with this because it's silly to have the same thought twice. So, you know, there's a whole idea. And what I refer to these days is the strategic value of clear space. So when you have clear space, it's like most people feel best about their job a week before they go on a big holiday. But it's not about the holiday. It's actually all the cleanup, all the sorting, all the categorization, and all the renegotiating with themselves so their head's clear, so they can be clear on the beach and on the golf course or wherever. I just say do it weekly, not yearly. And come on, you're actually probably already doing a lot of what the system is about. I didn't make something up. I just identified what it is that works when it works. When you're on and when time disappears, you know, what was that? What got you to that? And I just made explicit, what we implicitly do that really works. You know, things work.
I'm sorry. You're all about lists, but not daily to-do lists. Describe what it is that you are asking or telling, suggesting people do in terms of making those lists of things that they're committed to or want to do.
Yeah. It's not really about the list. A list becomes a way to keep track of an inventory of things. And the inventory of things you need to keep track of, things like your projects. Most people have between 30 and 100 what I call projects, things that take more than one step to finish, you know, that they can finish within a few weeks or months. Get tires on my car, the next vacation, hire this person, you know, research this, what we're going to send my kids to camp this summer, stuff like that. Those are projects. And just having a list of those projects out in front of you so that some part of you feels okay about your commitments and how well you're managing those and moving those. It doesn't have to be on a physical list. You could put them on the wall. You could put them anywhere. You just need to keep track of that inventory. It's just a list happens to be just a tracked inventory. Here's all the calls I need to make about any of that. Here's all the errands I need to run about any of that. Here's all the things I need to talk to my significant other about any of that.
Sometimes in the morning I will make a list just of things I need to do that day. But you explicitly say that's not really – that those aren't really useful.
Well, it's more useful than trying to keep it in your head, that's for sure. It's just that life changes a whole lot. So if you're trying to overstructure your day, you need a list of what you've got to do that day. It'll die if you don't do it. You know, that's what I call the hard landscape. So you do need that with the calendar things, the things you're committed to. And, you know, I've got to send that FedEx by the end of the day. Or I've got – today's the only day I can renew my license. So sure, you need to keep track of those. But then all the other things, which actually happens to be the vast majority, is the as soon as I can get to list. And you don't want to have to keep rewrite. Why rewrite those? So you look at the hard landscape and say, okay, that's what I got to. Then if you have any discretionary time at all, then you have the list of all the other things to do. And by the way, most people have over 150 of those other things they need to do if they actually sat down and had integrity about keeping track of the inventory.
And part of your thinking is that if we try to keep that stuff in our head, it's just overwhelming and stressful.
Yeah, that part of your head, if it's the only place that's holding it, it actually seems to operate like you should be doing all of them all the time. So as soon as you have two in there, you create failure and stress because you can't do them both at the same time, but some part of you feels like you ought to. And it creates – if it were more dramatic, it'd probably be easier to handle. It's just very, very subtle, and then it builds up and it becomes what I call the GSA of life, that gnawing sense of anxiety. That somewhere out there I might, would, could, should be – ought to be doing something, and it might be more important than whatever I'm currently doing. Oh, damn. You know, and that's that feeling, that subliminal feeling of stress, but there's more to do than I can do, but they haven't got the inventory.
So if we want to get rid of that feeling, what's your – give? Take us – not step by step necessarily, but what are the first few things you need to do?
Actually, it's pretty simple. I mean, it's a simple thing to do. It's just externalize anything that's potentially meaningful to you. Write it down. You know, make a big dump list out of all the things that you might need to pay attention to.
Just a pencil and paper.
Pencil and paper. Anything. Pencil and paper works great. But then you need to go through each one. That first list is what most people do as a to-do list. But there's still decision-making that you need to make about those things on the list. You write down mom. Well, great. You had one probably, historical data. What do you need? Why'd you write that down? Oh, her birthday is coming. Ah, well, what are you going to do about that? And so really it's the thinking process and the executive decision making that you need to take that second step. It's very important. You know, oh, yeah, I'm going to give her a party. What's the next step? Oh, I need to call my sister and see. So now making decisions about what you captured, that's the second critical thing you need to do. Thirdly, you need to park those things some place that some brain trusts you'll see at the right time if you don't finish the thing right then. And fourthly, you need to review and reflect on all that stuff on some consistent basis. So you're making trusted choices about what you're doing. But you can only feel good about what you're doing when you know what you're not doing. And this is what's required. I need to make the inventory of all those possible things I could be doing given all my commitments with myself and then step back and see that whole game and then decide, no, I'm going to take a nap instead.
So is this the kind of thing that takes a day, 2 days, a few hours? I mean, to make that initial, you know, list of things?
No, projects. You can start right now. Take 5 minutes. Just get a pen and paper and just everything that's still on your mind that you have attention on. Oh, I need to. Oh, yeah, that's – oh, I need to. Just start capturing all that. You can start right away.
How often do you do that?
As often as anything pops in there.
You just add to it.
Well, what I do is I capture it. I mean, I know the people listening to this can't see it, but my major capture tool is a great little notepad here that I keep in my wallet with a pen in it.
Incredibly low tech.
Very low tech because it's ubiquitous. It's fast. It's easy. I had a bunch of notes from dinner last night, and I don't leave them in there. That's a place to capture it. And
those things. That pad is blank.
That pad's blank.
So you tore those things out, and what'd you do with them?
that threw them into my in basket.
Just literally an in basket.
Literally. Well, I'm traveling, so I don't live here in San Francisco. So I have a red folder called in my briefcase, and all of those notes and cab receipts and business cards and so forth, all of those are in there. And then, you know, on the plane or sometime in the next 24 hours, I'll empty all that out and decide what to do about all of it.
But that seems sort of overwhelming in a way.
Well, what are your choices?
This is terrible. I hope my bank's not listening. I just throw those things away. I mean, I don't balance my checkbook.
Hey, that's fine. Throw away is fine. If however, some part of
you – I figure the bank is going to do a better job of that.
Well, that's their problem, not yours, or
well,
yours
could be
if they have a problem with it. This is really about just getting off your own back. If it is not potentially meaningful to you, throw it away or file it as reference or whatever. That's the whole point, is you decide what it means to you. I can't decide that. Even the bank can't decide that. You have to decide how meaningful it is that the bank decides it's meaningful or not to you. And then you will, so throw it away. That's fine.
David Allen, he's called a productivity guru, and his new book is called Getting Things Done, The Art of Stress-Free Productivity. If that's an old book. I'm sorry. The new one. See, I need to have a list of things that I need to prioritize.
It's
here.
New enough.
It's new enough. If you want to join us, ask him a question, tell us your problems that you have getting organized and productive, give us a call, 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786, or forum at kqed.org. You know, I checked, you have, about 1.3 million followers on Twitter.
Yep.
That's a lot of followers. What is it that you're offering that you think so many people want?
Hope.
You and Obama.
Well, you know, I think people are really looking for a way to surf on top of this game instead of feel buried by it. And, you know, there's an old aphorism in the personal growth movement that you can never get enough of what you don't really need. And, you know, what you don't need to do is work harder and faster. You know, you need to find a way to surf on top of that. But that's easier said than done. You know, say, okay, well, let me just go relax. Let me go have a balanced life. But you still have all of these commitments you need to manage. So the way out is through. So I just really uncovered, how do I handle all the stuff in my life so that I get the freedom of my mind that I'm after. So the end game here is really freedom. Freedom in your head, freedom to focus on what you want, freedom to be as creative as you want, and not miss some of the stuff that will start to undermine that if you lose track of it.
It sounds very New Agey, very California. And yet I looked at your client list. You've got the Marines, the Army, the Air Force, every branch of the military as clients. You've got your corporate CEOs, or at least companies, reads like a who's who of Silicon Valley. What do you tell those folks? I mean, they're managing people. Is it about to them? Is it also about just delegating and helping them let go of things?
Well, there's an inverse relationship between on your mind and getting done. So the more things, you know, sort of clog up in there, the less they're actually happening. So there is a whole lot of, you know, I guess the biggest issue out there right now is capacity. You know, we've got more work to do, less people to do it, less resources to do it. And that requires I have to be able to get more done with the energy I have or with less energy. And if you're trying to do that, there are a lot of things you can do that make it a lot easier to decide, you know, how to actually move the needle and move stuff forward. Quite simply, the way you get things done is you need to decide what done means and what doing looks like and where it happens. And that kind of decision making, that's executive decision making. What are we really going to finish about mom or the summer or this project or this problem? What does that mean? And this is just good business. I mean, you don't start a good business meeting without going, what are we trying to accomplish by the end of this thing? And you don't end a good discussion without going, wait a minute, what did we decide? What's the next action? Is that yours or mine? This is just common sense. So this is that's about as New Age as it is. It's called, hey, how about you just get real and businesslike?
So isn't it easier to be in charge of your life if you're in charge of your company or your organization, as opposed to being way down on the list and taking orders from the boss?
Oh, well, we're all at effect of the weather and our bosses and a lot of other things. So, you know, we start with, well, let's at least handle the 10 acres that you're in, make sure that's under control. Because, you know, most people complain about other people being out of control, but it's usually because they got their own out of controlness, and that other person's out of controlness is disturbing your out of controlness. But there really are no interruptions. There's only mismanaged inputs.
David Allen is our guest this hour, a productivity guru. If you'd like to talk to him, give us a call, 866-733-6786. You can also email us. It's forum@kqed.org, or leave a message on our Facebook page as well. Let's go to Oakland. Kathleen is on the line. Good morning.
Good morning. Hi. David, I've read your earlier books, and I've been trying to implement some of your ideas, but I'm going to try to use Microsoft Outlook, the task bars, and I can't quite figure out how to make that work. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about that.
And just generally technology. I mean, you were joking earlier, not joking, but you pulled out your little tiny pad that you keep in your wallet, but it doesn't have to be low-tech.
Doesn't have to be low-tech. I also can pull out my BlackBerry here, which is the end result of having taken the low-tech stuff and then decided what it means and then parked it in a high-tech list. Because then I can use the tool to synchronize with it. So, your question about Outlook tasks, actually anything that can manage lists, we talked about lists earlier, anything that can create a list just becomes the appropriate tool. You can use a paper planner to make a list of your projects and phone calls you need to make and errands you need to run and so forth. And you can also take something like Outlook and sort of simplify it by using the task within there and create categories for your tasks to make these different lists. The one of the biggest problems with technology is it becomes too hard to use the technology as fast as you need to use it. So you need something that's very, very simple and very easy to input and very easy to then access. Another problem with a computer is out of sight, out of mind. You know, whereas paper can be a lot more in your face and a lot more, you don't have to worry. Now I have to remember where to go look to go do something. You know, I'm a high-tech guy. I like things small, black, high-tech, and expensive. You know, and later on I'll figure out if it actually does anything. So,
surprised you got a BlackBerry. Do you have an iPhone as well?
No, my wife does. But we, just for encryption and security purposes inside our company, iPhones don't have those protections yet.
Kathleen, is there anything more specific about Outlook you'd like David to respond to?
Well, I find that I've got post-it notes, and I do have the paper system, and then I've been trying to figure out how to incorporate the task list in Microsoft Outlook, and it just ends kind of collecting things, and I don't quite get to the next step, which is the executive decision making, I guess, around the task.
Yeah, that's the big key. See, the problem is most organizations, and I don't know if this is you, Kathleen, but most people's organization are just incomplete list of still unclear things. And then just trying to keep a system is much more work than it's paying off. See, if you really get complete, you really get it all out of your head, and you really make all these action decisions, what's the next action on these, and park those in a trusted way that you know you'll engage with, it truly frees up the psyche, but really not until then. So there is an investment you have to make of time and mental energy to upgrade your process to be doing this and to change the habit. So it's such an easy habit to keep stuff in your head and to pile stuff in just the easiest places. So just a couple of things, Kathleen. Just the more complete you get it and the more you can simplify it into as much one spot as you can, the better.
All right, Kathleen, good
Great,
luck.
Thank you.
All right, good luck. You know, some people no doubt read the book, go to a seminar, listen to the tapes or the DVDs and think, sounds great, but, you know, they don't quite get to, sort of like what Kathleen was saying, sort of get to maybe some part of what you're suggesting, but not can't quite get all the way there. What stops people, do you think?
Oh, probably a lot of things. I'll cut to the chase on this. The biggest barrier to entry is people's tolerance of their stress. As soon as you write down a little bit, you feel a little bit better, and that's good enough, not worth doing anymore. And, you know, I empty my in-basket and do regular reviews and keep all this current for the same reason I brush my teeth and take showers. If I don't, the scuzz factor gets too high. It's just psychic scuzz. Yeah.
Intolerable.
Yeah, I don't tolerate that. And as much stress as you're willing to tolerate by not doing this will be – it's not – you kind of get to your comfort zone and you go, well, you know, I don't have enough juice to keep going any more than that. This is fine. In other words, if the good fairy showed up and disappeared all your emails right now, in 10 days you'd have exactly the number you have, because it's not about volume. It's about your tolerance of unprocessed things you feel comfortable with. Some people have 30. Some people have 3,000.
All right. Let's go to Palo Alto now. Robin is on the line. Welcome. Robin, are you there?
I am.
Hi, go right ahead. You're on with David Allen.
Thank you, David and Michael. Thanks. I recently retired January 1st from practicing law for 32 years, looking forward to less stress in my life and being able to do more of the things I want to do. And what I've found is that my friends, thinking that I had more than enough time on my hands, can now do things for them. And so I'm more stressed than I was when I was working, when people would sort of withhold making demands on me because they knew how hard I was working. And so I'm always feeling as though I'm letting other people down by not meeting their expectations, and my inbox is larger and larger, and my stress levels are larger and larger.
Uh-oh, not what you wanted. David, what should she do?
Well, the cure for all of that is to always keep an inventory of what you have committed to. And just be aware of all of that. You know what? If you haven't kept track of all of those things, people will always overcommit. So as soon as you have, when I coach senior executives and they wind up sitting down and looking at after the end of two or three days at the 82 projects we uncovered they actually have, every one of them changes their mind about what meetings they let themselves get scheduled for. So the word NO comes a little easier the more conscious and objective you are about what you actually are committed to. So I think you need to be careful about making sure that you're not flunking retirement. And retirement is like anything else. There's only a certain capacity that you've got to do a certain number of things, and keeping track of those, and just you still need to be making good choices about those. And I understand the feeling of now, you don't want to turn people down. You don't like to say no to people, and you think you've got more time. So that's probably the critical issue. You need to get really clear about what you can and can't do. So, always helps to keep a good inventory.
All right, Robin, good luck.
Thank you.
All right. Let's go now to San Ramon, and Shankar is on the line. Good morning.
Hi. Good morning. Great show, and it's a privilege to talk to David. And I like the way in which you basically get onto cognitive aspects of how things process in our brains. I wanted to get your idea, and this is something that I always grapple with, managing short-term versus long-term tasks. There are certain things which are long-term, which I need to do over the next 1 year or 2 years or 6 months. And there are things which need to do today, now, or within a month. How do you manage and, do all of this stuff?
Shankar, it's a good question. It's tricky. People often confuse long-term with someday maybe. And long-term is a now project that takes more actions to finish. So you need to get real clear what's the very next action on that long-term thing, and then park that along with all your other very next actions. Buy nails at the hardware store and draft first chapter of, long-term book. Those need to be side by side as things to be able to be done as soon as you can do them. So you need to start. That's why figuring out the next action on things is such a critical element, because it gets it down to a doable, definable, winnable, achievable task that you can do and you need to put right in front of you. So you need to get honest with yourself and say, look, is that a someday maybe? You just don't have the bandwidth to move on that? Fine. Then put it on a someday maybe list. Don't kid yourself. If it's an active project, figure out the next action and park it in there with all the rest of them and deal with it that way.
Shankar, is that helpful?
Yes. Thank you very much.
All right. Good luck. We're going to take many more of your calls in the coming half hour, 866-733-6786, the number to call if you'd like to talk to David Allen about his book, Getting Things Done, and his system, GTD, as the shorthand is, The Art of Stress-Free Productivity, 866-733-6786, the number to call, forum@kqed.org. Also, just quickly, David, we're going to take a break in just about 30 seconds, but there are some also specific things like getting your files in order, too. Just give us one or two of those real quickly.
Filing is – especially paper-based filing, general reference stuff. You pick up this – what do I do with this brochure? That's the stuff that will kill you. So you need a very quick, very easy, just simple alpha listing of things and a very simple filing system, because if you don't, that stuff will back up on you against all your other systems like bad plumbing. So that stuff starts to pile up and it starts to become confusing. So you need a very quick way to get that stuff out of your face and out of your hair that's easily retrievable within 60 seconds.
All right. David Allen will be with us for the rest of the hour. I'm Scott Schaefer here today for Dave Iverson. Stay with us. And welcome back to Forum. Scott Schaefer sitting in this morning for Dave Iverson. My guest is David Allen. His new book is called Ready for Anything and Making It All Work. And if you'd like to join us this morning, give us a call, 866-733-6786. And David, here's an email from Chris from the BlackBerry who writes, can David expand on this? My experience is that there are many interruptions in a given workday. I'm not sure there seems to be an earlier part of that question missing. But yeah, we're all interrupted. And one of the things, let me just ask you personally, we all have that little icon on our desk that says when we have new email. And I'm addicted to checking it as soon as I see that. I assume that's a bad idea.
Well, it's a suboptimal idea. Let's put it that way. You know, if you're waiting on hearing about $1 million contract that somebody's going to sign, I'd be just staring at the computer waiting for it to come in. So, you know, there are always exceptions to this. But you know, primarily what you want to do is to be able to manage placeholders so that – what I mean by a placeholder is somebody walks in. Scott, you walk in and say, David, hey, could you handle X, Y, Z? And you're my boss. I say, yeah, I can handle that. If you turn around and then walk out and I don't capture that someplace that I trust, now my brain says, oh, my God, I've got to remember, but I also have to do this other thing. That's why people get so angry with people who, quote, interrupt them. But that was just a mismanaged input. My boss has the right to walk in and ask me to do something. Great. I write a little note. I throw it in my own in basket. If I know I'm going to zero out that in basket before the end of the day, make a decision about what I'm going to need to do about that, that's fine. I just took that input, put a placeholder in, I go turn right back to where I am. So that looks like multitasking, but it's actually rapidly refocusing with appropriate placeholders. If you understand that, then – and by the way, back to what you said, Scott. If you keep constantly checking, most of the world out there is living in emergency scan modality. And you're not actually zeroing out all this stuff on some consistent basis, so you're always afraid you're missing something, so you're always trying to be on. See, because I know I'm going to zero this stuff out at least once every 24 to 48 hours, and I know that every week I'm going to take at least a couple of hours and bring up the rear guard on everything, I'm kind of just dumb and happy, and I do not need to be following up on all that. They can reach me if it's an emergency, and seldom will it be. But they have to trust that I have a system, and I have to trust that I have a systematic process that will handle that. If you don't, you'll be at effect of all that stuff coming at you.
So don't let interruptions derail what you're doing.
Well, again, if you should be getting the interruption, that's just that you should be getting the. It's not an interruption. That's your job. That's your life. If you shouldn't be getting it, stop it. Duh.
Duh. Let's go back to the phones. Sarah in San Jose, you're on with David Allen. Good morning.
Good morning. My question is this: I'm good at making lists, and seem to have trouble with is then when I make my list of my tasks is how to allocate time, the appropriate amount of time to get things done on my list of things to do. That seems to be where I get tripped up.
So does that just freeze you in place? You're indecisive about that, or what happens?
I get frozen because some of the tasks seem to be insurmountable, or I'm not sure how long it's going to take me to get it done in an appropriate amount of time.
Time management.
Yeah, there's a couple of things on that, Sarah. First of all, by the way, do you have a real specific example you're willing to share about that?
Yes. For instance, I'm trying to go through things that we need to decide that we're going to donate, old clothes that used to belong to my daughter, or getting things ready for the school year, going through supplies and things like that.
Right. So just a real quickie. Sarah, what's the next action on that? If you had just one, you had nothing to do but that, what's the very next thing you would need to do, very next physical, visible activity?
Getting things out of the space where those items are physically parked.
Right. Just go purge and sort of purge and organize whatever that space is.
Right. Right. Exactly.
And how long would that take?
It seems like if I a couple of days, or if I did it in small blocks of time, or maybe, you know, 3-4 hours, 5 hours, if I did it all in one.
Yeah. No, I got you. By the way, do you have all the boxes and all the things you need to, for the results of going through it? In other words,
in one case, yes, in one case, no.
Okay, well, this is kind of like writing a book. You know, yes, right. Draft book is a next action, but how about, you know, a boot computer, hit a few keys and see what happens? Basically, you need, you know, you're freaking yourself out. Don't worry, my dear, because the people who procrastinate the most are the most sensitive, intelligent, and creative people. Because, like you, in a quarter of a second, you can generate incredible phantoms and demons about how incredibly tough this whole thing is going to be, how many decisions you're going to have to make all about all that, and just totally blow your own fuses and freak yourself out faster than anybody. So you have to get smart about how to dumb it down. So you dumb it down to, let me just take 30 minutes and go see what happens. Ding. And give yourself a winnable, achievable task and break it down to something you can bite off like that. And then, of course, as you probably can guess, once you get started, you'll start to have fun and look at this and look at this whole thing and we could give them this. So, you know, and sometimes it is nice to go, okay, I do need a whole Saturday for this, you know, and get somebody to help, by the way, to hold a focus for you and with you.
And Sarah, guess what? You've got a weekend coming up, so maybe you can get started.
That's true.
All right. Well, thanks so much.
It's just a matter of breaking it down into smaller chunks.
Yeah.
All right. Good. Well, thanks and good luck to you. There's a whole psychology to this, isn't there? It's a psychological aspect to this.
Well, I'm not a psychologist. I'm a practicing human being. So I guess you could call it psychological if you say it has to do with how you think and what's going on in your psyche. So, yeah. I mean, you know, having – I got into this, Scott, years ago because actually right across the bay over there when I got a black belt in karate before you were probably born, you know, I discovered the strategic value of clear space. You know, and there's a lot of meditative exercises in the martial arts. You know, there may be a spiritual component, but there's a very practical component. I mean, if four people jump you in a dark alley, you don't want 1,500 unprocessed emails hanging onto your psyche. So getting clear in your head, you know, was actually a very real thing in the martial arts, clearing the mind like water, that whole thing. That sounds kind of frou-frou, na-na-nu-nu, Californias, but it's actually a very real experience. There are real techniques you can do to clear your mind. As I got into the professional world, I saw how many things started to screw up having a clear head, and I said, let me get back to clear head. Well, how do I do that? That's how I uncovered this.
Other than martial arts, do you do yoga, meditation, anything like that?
I do my own versions of, meditative kinds of things, contemplative kinds of things, sure.
So that reinforces the clear-headedness?
Sure. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. All right, let's do some email here. John writes, your guest seems to use paper a lot, is using computers, smartphones, other devices to track GDT. Lists a help or a hindrance to getting things done?
Doesn't matter. Whatever works. The thing is, they need to be ubiquitous. For instance, I use paper for capturing. That's very different than organizing. Capturing just says, here's all the notes I'm taking. Boom, 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 boom.
So you get it out of your
Later
head.
On, I then need to go through those notes. Then I will actually digitize those because I use Lotus Notes. I use an add-on for Lotus Notes that matches to my methodology called e-productivity. That syncs to the BlackBerry. So I like technology. I think technology can work extremely well as long as you work it. The problem is a lot of those things are overbuilt. It takes too much thinking to know how to put it in there and then too hard to get it back out. But if it is useful to you, and I use it as much as anybody, but paper is a very different thing. Paper actually, first of all, it's more ubiquitous. If I wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning with an idea, I don't want to have to boot a computer. Trust me. And my wife and I keep junior pads by each phone because, you know, who knows when input's coming in.
How many different folders do you have, digital folders?
Digital folders meaning
– like where do these things, these different projects you have and different lists? I mean, so you go to the pad and you see you've jotted down 10 things. Then how many – different places can you
in terms of functioning parked. Lists that I've got, you know, I have a list of all my projects. I've got about 40 or 50 projects right now. That's just one list. And then I have a list of actions I need to do. And those are, I've got 7 or 8 of those lists divided by, like, here's all the calls I need to make. Here's all the stuff I need to do online. Here's all the errands I need to run. Here's all the things I need to go over with my wife. So those become just context specific lists because 150 things, if you put it all on one list, gets a little overwhelming. It's actually easier to split them out into more useful ways to see those actions and be reminded about those.
And so what do you check those in the morning? How many days – how often do you check those?
Well, I check the calendar first to see if I have any room to do anything else. You know, if it's all wall-to-wall, why should I even look at any of the other lists? Because I don't have time to get to them. It's just if I have discretionary time, then I want to be able to see where's my inventory of other soon-as-I-can-get-to kinds of things just to be able to – and you know, if you're doing this regularly and you're keeping this regularly reviewed and current, it doesn't take but a half a second or 3 seconds a day at looking at these things. I know I kind of give the impression that, gee, you're all the time in your list. Hardly ever. Yeah. If you really work them, the whole point of that is to free yourself up so you're not having to focus on anything except whatever you want to focus on.
866-733-6786, the number to call if you want to ask David Allen a question. And let's go now to Joplin, Missouri. Alexandra, welcome.
Hi, I'm wondering what to do about spouses who refuse to organize.
Okay, well,
Is that the case for you?
Well, he's much less organized than I would prefer him to be, and sometimes that costs us money or extra time that I feel like we don't have.
Well, you know, trying to teach either your kids or a significant other something that you think you do well and they don't do well, good luck. Oftentimes, you're better off hiring an expensive California consultant like me and you know, get them turned on. Or give them my book, anyway. You could do that. And then they come up with stuff that's their own idea, stuff you've been telling them for 20 years. Quite simply, one of the things you need to do is make sure you manage all of your own stuff very well. And do things like, gee, dear, if there's something I want you that you need to see, where should I put that I can trust you'll see it regularly and you'll find out where their in basket is? You know, and so you can get subtle with this, but you need to model it yourself, understand what a good systemic process is.
Alexandra, does he think he has a problem?
Sometimes he says that he does, but whenever I suggest ideas to prevent procrastination, he's not willing to listen, or he appears visibly stressed out, like he won't take my advice.
So part of it is maybe getting him to want to change, I guess.
Right.
Well, you know, part of this is all going to come back to, you know, what do you need to do? How do you deal with an immovable object? That's what strategic thinking is what can I not change and how do I navigate around it? So you may need to have a certain level of an acceptance. You know, if this has been, you know, 2 weeks that you've had this experience, you might have a chance. If it's been 20 years, a level of acceptance might be, you know, probably the appropriate thing to do.
All right, Alexander, good luck.
Thank you.
All right, let's go to Lodi now. Ashley is on the line. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, you're on. Go ahead.
Oh, thank you. I was hoping that Mr. Allen could maybe just discuss briefly, I know you guys are short on time, how social networking sites are now kind of contributing to the stress factor of the younger generation, that they're never online, as you said earlier, constantly checking your email and status updates, that they seem to always not have enough time for anything. And I'll take the comments off the air.
All right, thanks.
Well, you know, social media people often ask me, they said, with all the Twitter followers and whatever, you know, social media is like a cocktail party. You know, is it good or bad? Well, it depends, you know, why you're at the cocktail party. I mean, you could be signing a great business deal there, or you could be wasting your life there. You know, so it's not don't shoot the media.
How do you tell which one you're doing?
You need to know where you're going and how important this stuff is to you. So sure, you know, the sinkhole of just surfing the web and email and social media is a fabulous way to waste your time. And, you know, I guess there are worse ways to waste your time. You could take drugs and, you know, rob banks. But, you know, but the truth is you have to ask yourself, look, where am I going and what's important to me? And you know, I'm sorry, nobody gets off the hook in terms of having to make some hard decisions about how you allocate your resources and how you try and what you need to watch out for in terms of your addictions about what's going to hook you in. You know, why email and social media is so addictive is because it is addictive. Random reinforcement. Random positive reinforcement. That's why golf is so addictive. One shot will keep you coming back. One cool email will keep you checking. One kind of fun thing on social media will keep you coming back and looking. So it is really something that you know, I guess the good news is everybody at much younger ages is getting an opportunity to discover what discipline and focus really, really is required and, you know, live and learn.
What about vacations? How do you deal with information management while you're on vacation?
Well, I think that the real key, and it's a universal, you know, coaching I have for everybody, is what do you need to do to have a clear head? So if on your vacation you're always worrying about what's going on back at the ranch, you better have a tap in back at the ranch so you can relax. So spend an hour, figure out what's going on so that the other 23, you're clear. So, you know, and if some part of you says, I don't even want to have to do that, then what do you need to do before you leave so you don't have to do that and it won't pop into your head? So there's no right or wrong about that. There is only what do you need to do to get clear space inside of your head.
866-733-6786 is the number to call. Let's go to Mountain View now. Neil, welcome.
Oh, hi. I became familiar with David's book, Getting Things Done, just about 2 months ago, and I found it to be extremely useful, and it's...
How did you use it? What did you do? What did you do differently?
There's one line in there, he says, which just hit me square between the eyes, that putting 90% of his stuff in some organizational method and having 10% lying scattered is not good enough. You either go 100% or you don't do it. And I've been trying to organize my own life for years and failing at it. And David's, that line really resonated with me. So I have started to put all of my thoughts, what needs to get done, everything I've tried putting down on paper or actually in my computer. And one of the websites that I found, I just accidentally stumbled upon, is called workflowy.com. I'm not associated with it. It's two guys who are building it. They still don't have a business model, but it is useful for just generating a list. And that's what I've been doing, just creating a list of things I need to get done. And as I go through it, and, you know, I find that book to be such an amazing tool. It's been life-changing in just the last 2 months.
Are you getting more things done?
Oh, hell yeah. Not just getting more things done, but just in the middle of the night, I'd no longer wake up and say, oh, my God, I forgot to do this. Deadline is coming up, this thing, that thing. That is all gone now.
Great.
Stress-free productivity.
Well, good
exactly.
luck. Good luck. Glad you found it helpful.
Thanks.
Let's go to Richmond. I assume it's Richmond, California, not Richmond, Virginia. Pat, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for your books. I've enjoyed reading them. They've been helpful, and I'm a wonderful cook, but a messy cook, and I hired myself an organizer for the kitchen, and my husband kept saying, well, I've told you to do this 20 years ago, but it didn't work until I decided to do it and got some outside help. And now we both cook in the kitchen very joyfully and much more productively. My question for you is about creativity and how do you organize creative projects? Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
I have 13 boxes of my mother's journals of 3 or 4 strands of her life. It's going to involve a lot of investigation and interviewing to do anything with it. I've had them for 12 years. I don't know where to get started. My husband has 5 boxes of 80 years of family photographs. I'm a painter. We have various, he's a filmmaker. We have various creative lives and activities.
Yeah, David,
how do you get it all organized?
Yeah, how do you get it organized and how do you balance that, the creative part of you versus the sort of, you know, business, got to get this done because it has to be done side of you?
Well, the interesting thing about this is that's why my new book, Making It All Work, the subtitle is Winning at the Game of Work and the Business of Life. We need to get a lot more – we need to lighten up about the work stuff, and we need to get a lot more business-like around the rest of it. It's really all the same thing, but we oftentimes make that dichotomy called, well, there's business stuff and then there's the creative stuff. Actually, my work has hit a nerve in the entertainment world and with musicians or whatever because – you know, people use it for different purposes, but what this does is it actually opens up that ability to be spontaneous and intuitive. That's why I do it. You know, I'm more of a, you know, kind of a messy cook, and I spread stuff around all over the place too. I think, Pat, to your point, the important thing there is that you get the stuff out of your head. You're overwhelming yourself, it sounds like, inside your own psyche, and so your psyche is for having ideas, not for holding them. So are you familiar with mind mapping or something like that, where you sit down and just dump stuff out of your head?
But that's the problem, is that's how I think.
Yeah. Well, so
I don't think linear. I think mind map.
Right. But you now need to externalize mind maps. You know, go up to a big whiteboard and dump everything you just told me, only keep going. there's that, and there's that, and that's going to mean that, and that's going to mean that, and they just keep going till it's empty. You'll be amazed what will happen when you do that.
Okay.
See, a lot of what I've discovered is that if you're trying to keep this stuff in your psyche, there is no light to the end of that tunnel. None. You must externalize this stuff. And when you externalize it, I guarantee you, you'll feel a lot more controlled and a lot more focused. And once you get it all externalized, just look up there and say, okay, if I had to do one thing right now, one physical visible activity on any of that, what would that be? And again, give yourself a bite-sized chunk to just start moving on it.
All right, Pat,
good luck. Thank you very much.
Yeah, good luck. Let's go to some email now. Sean in Mountain View writes, how do you balance the need for relaxation when you have a list of next actions always there to take your time?
Well, if they're actions you told yourself to do, what are your options? You're going to file it in your head, or you're going to have it out in front of you, or ignore it and think you should be looking at it. You know, look, people get mad at me for their list. I'm sorry, it ain't my list. That's yours. You know, all I don't shoot the messenger. I'm just letting you know that where you keep track of it and how you engage with it will either cause you stress because you're not appropriately engaging with it, or you will look at it and say no. You have to get used to looking at a big list of your own stuff and going no. Because quite frankly, you're saying no to everything in your life except whatever the one thing is you're doing 24 hours a day.
And just forgetting about the list is okay too, right? If it's not you're spending all your time implementing the list.
If you can truly forget about it.
Is that what you do?
Well, why would I forget about it if it was something that's potentially meaningful to me? If it wasn't meaningful, I threw it away to begin with. There's no need to have it to keep track of.
So you're not – that would suggest you don't do things that aren't meaningful. You're just doing them as opposed to, say, they're fun, you know, or go for a walk.
That's
on the beach.
Meaningful. Relaxing is doing nothing is one of the most meaningful things you can do.
Would you put that on a list?
No.
A
huge amount of my life doesn't go on my list. I just do it when I feel like it. The only reason for the list is to keep track of the stuff I can't finish while I'm doing it there so that I can be free all the time.
All right. Let's see. Another email here from Andrea. I know it sounds overly simplistic, but I think people are trying to stuff too much into their lives. When learn to manage my to-do items becomes a to-do item, there's something wrong on a much more basic level. Is there such a thing as too much organization?
Oh, sure. Yeah, you can over-organize. It's very easy to get to avoid your life by just, you
being
know,
obsessive.
Yeah, well, that's productivity porn. You know, hey, what's the next cool thing that'll solve it for me? So, again, there are worse ways to waste time. I mean, that could just be a hobby, and that, you know, that's fine. But absolutely, the ideal place to be, what I call the captain and commander sort of state to be in, where time disappears and you're really on, sort of in your zone, is when you're just structured and organized enough.
All right. Emily writes, I tend to take care of things right away, often to find out that the solution that immediately presented itself was not the best one. How do you or can you prevent this from happening?
Well, get older.
You know, wiser.
Make better decisions about that. But come on. That's how you learn is, you know, just don't want to make the same mistake twice. You know, get going and keep recalibrating. And I think that's a lot of what this is about. You know, in the programming world, agile programming has become quite a productive way to deal with it, which is don't try to overstructure, over second guess this thing. You know, get started, ready, fire, aim, or ready, fire, steer, get going, course correct. You just need to make sure that you don't get too invested that your first choice had to be the right one. You know, oftentimes you'll only get to where you're going by picking a goal that's not the right goal, but you need to start moving toward that goal before you could see the next angle. So get going, and you're actually on.
Is part of this unlearning things that we learned, mistaken lessons, things that we're taught, things that we pick up when we're younger?
It probably is, as I think about it. I mean, I'm more of a just start doing the appropriate behaviors, and the other ones will just fall away. You know, so if you're like me, where I can't stand keeping stuff in my head, you know, unlearning keeping stuff in your head didn't have to happen. I just got attracted to writing everything down. So I suppose that's unlearning, but I didn't have to sit and focus on what didn't work. All I had to do was start doing the stuff that worked and made that start to take hold.
Do you you ever work with kids?
Yeah. Yeah.
What kind of things do you teach them?
Exactly the same thing. As a matter of fact, our next book, I'm co-writing with two parents. I'm not a parent, but I have two parents that are – one of them is head of our coaching services and another one's, you know, big – is a senior executive in one of our client companies. And they've been, you know, working with their kids for a while. And the next book is going to be For Caring Adults, How to Use Daily Teaching Moments to Teach Your Kids How to Think This Way. Because a lot of what this is about is, look, what outcome are you trying to achieve? What's the next action you need to get there? But you can take a six-year-old and talk about the summer vacation. Say, hey, what would you like to have true by the end of the summer? What do you think we need to do to get there? How would you like Christmas to be? What's the next action? And see, we've now got great war stories from parents down to age 3 and 4 where kids are learning what an in basket is, where to put things, how to sort things. Because, you know, kids are – that's one of my long-term visions, that we'll get this into the school system.
Yeah. Parents would love to have kids that have inboxes. I mean, like, do you have to, you know, make your bed, fold the laundry, whatever it is you want the kids to – you know, the chores. Sure.
The problem is your parents – I had a guy who did this. He went to one of my seminars, went home that night, and he had a kid who never cleaned his room. So he said, well, let me try this. Got a pretty colored box, and he said, we're going to play a game. We're going to go gather everything that's somewhere that doesn't belong permanently. And so they piled it all in the box. Then he said, okay, now the next part of the game, we're going to take him out one at a time and say, now, where does that go? And the kid from then on cleaned his room. Think about this. You tell your kid to clean the room, they do just like these two of our callers have done, totally blow themselves up because of how many things they know they're going to have to decide and think about. You think it's easy to go clean your room. The kid's sitting there going, what am I going to have to think about and decide or whatever? And they just blow up. So out of the mouths of babes. But it's the same principle, and kids at very early ages can learn these behaviors, but we don't seem to be born doing this. I don't know if, Scott, you popped out of the womb and went, hi, what are we trying to accomplish? What's the next step and who's doing
hardly,
it?
Hardly,
yeah.
Hardly.
It's learnable behavior.
What's the role? You know, this is to a certain extent about organization. What's the role for brainstorming?
Oh, brainstorming is really we're brainstorming all the time. As soon as I say I want to get out of the room, somebody says, should I go here? Should I go there? Here's the thing to do. So our mind is constantly going that way. But having a structured process where you actually sit down and allow your brain to go wherever it goes about a theme, topic, or project or situation is an extremely powerful thing to do. It's how we naturally sort of plan anyway, but you can actually make that implicit thing we do much more explicit, and it's a very powerful technique, is to give yourself techniques like mind maps or anything, building treasure maps or just going up and dumping ideas onto a computer or into a word processor. That's why word processors helped, you know, productivity for writers a lot.
And we said during the break, you were saying that one of the, you know, the earliest indications that we need this kind of thing was the calendar. You know, that
sure.
You can't keep all this stuff in your head.
Yeah, and that was 100 years ago that it started to become, you know, reasonably popular in the professional world for people to carry calendars. And I ask people, I go, why do you think a calendar showed up? Well, because your head couldn't keep track of it. And almost nothing's happened since then. And, you know, I scratch my head and go, wait a minute. It's just much more subtle than, hey, Scott, I'll meet you at 3 o'clock tomorrow. And I'm, you know, really in trouble if I don't show up. But there's no difference, if you will, psychologically between my commitment that says I need to handle this thing with my kids and I need to, you know, deal with this with my nephew and I'm yada, yada. And it's just you need to get explicit about those as well.
All right. David Allen, his latest book is called Ready for Anything and Making It All Work. Thanks so much for joining us. What are you doing this weekend, by the way? You relaxing?
This weekend, what am I doing this weekend? Well, my wife and I, we're going back to Ojai where we live. And we're starting to pack up because we're actually moving to Santa Barbara.
Oh, boy. Lots of to-do lists there.
Weekend, got lots of meetings coming up this week. So,
oh good. We'll have some fun as well. Forum is produced by Kevin Gilrey and Judy Campbell. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. And our executive producer is Raul Ramirez. I'm Scott Schaefer here today for Dave Iverson. Michael Krasny will be here Monday. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.